We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28, and to donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Thursday, July 23rd, and if you haven't seen the latest controversy in conservative world, this is a measure of whether we want to actually be consistent with our worldview or if we make exceptions for those who we claim are occasionally on our side. And so Fox News star and pundit Guy Benson, who is openly gay, married, quote unquote, you know, married his husband according to their lingo, which we know is not actually a marriage, but unfortunately our culture at least calls it that for now, married his husband back in 2017, 2019, around that area. And they have, via surrogate, had a child a couple of years ago, and now this week welcomed a baby girl via surrogacy. And of course, this was splashed all over social media, and rightly, the second surrogate baby drew congratulations from commentators on the right, as well as criticism over the surrogacy. And it seems that only his close friends, people at Fox News, some other conservatives who don't want to be consistent, gave that congratulation. But the criticism over surrogacy then, of course, drew criticism and some very vulgar comments from specifically Fox News personality Kennedy. I've unfortunately had the privilege of being on her show a few times, and I it was the worst experience at Fox News because during the breaks, she would always just go into this totally unnecessary, unrelated profanity. I guess she just had to get it out of her system before the FCC actually would have dinged Fox News for that. But she made a very vulgar comment that I won't repeat on air to Daily Wire's Megan Basham, simply for Megan pointing out that it doesn't matter whether it's Guy Benson or Dave Rubin or two gay guys that are on the left who are liberal, purple-haired weirdos. It doesn't matter. The principle remains the same, that child commodification and purchase is wrong, and that intentionally depriving a child of their mother or their father in the context of either two men, two women, a single woman, a single man, anything outside the context of a married one man and one woman is a wrong way to bring a child into a quote unquote family. We have to get back to redefining the family, how the laws of nature and of nature's God say, and that we cannot, as a society, redefine that. But this has become a flashpoint in the new conservative right, because now we have this divide between those who call themselves conservatives, like Guy Benson, who is a conservative on some issues, on fiscal responsibility, on, you know, perhaps voting for the GOP over the left, on a few of those issues. But he's not holistically a conservative, clearly, right? Because he's openly gay, he's openly flaunting the fact that he completely disregards the definition of marriage. And so we have to be very careful, I think, as a society, who we listen to, for one, but also who we claim is actually a conservative. They can be a liberal with some conservative ideology or some conservative issues. So for more on this, let's welcome in Orrin McIntyre, who is a host at The Blaze. And Orrin, I really appreciated, you know, your commentary on this, as well as the actual conservatives who want to be consistent on this and don't say, well, just because Guy Benson is quote unquote one of us and he's on Fox News, well, we'll give him a pass for this. No, we need to be consistent that commodification of children is always wrong, no matter the context, and that we need to ban surrogacy. And we also need to make sure that the people we're calling conservatives don't just have some issues that they happen to be conservative just in that one lane, but their entire worldview isn't actually conservative.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to remember that conservative isn't a political position. It's a political disposition. And so the question is, what are you conserving? What are you fighting for? As conservatives in America who actually value the founders and the values that it was based on, we should ultimately be conserving the Christian tradition. If we're conserving anything else, then we're doing it wrong. And it seems like what a lot of establishment conservatives want to do is conserve the 1990s, the early 2000s even. I mean, even Bill Clinton wouldn't have been for gay marriage at the time. So we now have a bunch of Republicans who are fighting for a position that both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton rejected in their run at 2008. They were both lying, of course, but they said they believe that marriage was between a man and a woman just that not that long ago. And now we have Republicans who are saying, if you hold that view, then you're some kind of bigot and you're some kind of woke person trying to push people out of the coalition, inverting the use of the word entirely. If we're going to run around saying we know what a woman is, how can the left not know what a woman is? But then we don't know what marriage is. We don't know what a father is, what it means to, you know, father a child. This is insane. You know, we cannot pretend to be a conservative movement when we can't get the basic definitions of our civilizational structures down and enforce them among people who are going to be in our ranks.
Yeah, so well said. And you're so right that conservative isn't a party. It's not just a political position. To be conservative, what are we conserving? Well, the truth of reality as God has presented us to. And that's the foundation. And then we have viewpoints that flow logically and consistently from that view into other and all areas of life, including politics and policy. But even more than that. And so when we build up our worldview from a foundation of what we're conserving, then it naturally should flow into our political view. But somehow the GOP has intentionally, I think, forgotten that they are supposed to be the party that is built on that foundation of conservatism. And so they've increasingly gone to the left as a party. And as long as they can point to the Democrats and say, hey, we're better than them, because like, look, we're not out having, you know, trans parties on the White House lawn like Joe Biden, so vote for us. They somehow think that that makes them the more conservative party. But we, especially moving forward in the post-Trump era, where Trump, let's be honest, is not and never has been and was not conservative on the social issues. I mean, he has always been, and Melania very openly as well, has been in favor of gay marriage, has been in favor of more babies by, you know, any sort of metric with the IVF executive order. And, you know, he's been against, thankfully, men and women's sports. Maybe that's where he draws the line. But he's genuinely not conservative on the social issues. And so I think, Oren, we need to reject this whole big tent mentality like the Democrats have, and they're welcoming socialists. And we need to say, okay, let's redefine what a party looks like that's actually founded on the basis of what it means to be conservative.
I mean, this really is a case of a bite of the poison fruit, right? Like, if you redefine what a marriage is, then it's only a matter of time before you redefine what a man or a woman is. These things, it's not some slippery slope fallacy. It's pattern recognition. Once I've redefined one core term that defines society, it becomes easier to redefine the rest. But conservatives always want to just kind of be liberals going the speed limit. They want to have socially acceptable opinions. They don't want to get disinvited from parties or get in trouble in public, at work, these kind of things. And so they try to find some kind of moderated position somewhere between, hey, we shouldn't be mutilating children's genitals, but hey, I don't want to be one of those scary people that says only men and women can get married. You simply can't have this lack of courage and then have leadership. People vote for people who think they have a right, a duty to serve. They vote for people who are confident in their worldview. They don't look for people who are trying to check every box. They look for people who are leading, who are setting that example, who have the courage. And so when you start the game behind the eight ball because you can't even be consistent within your own morality when it comes to the definition of marriage and children and family and men and women, well, then why would anyone put you in a position of power?
Yeah, 100%. And also, when we're looking at the, as Trump has rightly called them, the fake news media, when we're looking at outlets like Fox News, like Newsmax, and you know, some of the mainstream cable outlets on the so-called right, really what we're talking about with Fox News in particular is just the PR media of the RNC or the GOP. I mean, they are not by any means conservative and coming from the perspective of the biblical worldview. I mean, there were times when I was a Newsmax contributor and I would be talking to producers about the segment, and I was actually hired to be a legal and faith contributor. So a lot of the segments that I pitched would be on specifically biblical worldview topics. And it was interesting to see what topics they approved and what they said, well, you know, basically that goes against the narrative of the RNC and the GOP. They didn't want to touch particularly gay marriage or, you know, a lot of that whole LGBTQ agenda. They were willing to cover the trans stuff because that's still, you know, of course, within the mainstream Republican view that, you know, yes, the trans stuff is wrong. We want to get men out of women's sports. But overall, they have an agenda and it's not a distinctly conservative one. And you can see this with the Fox News personalities' responses to Guy Benson. And the fact that, you know, Guy Benson's history, I don't know if a lot of listeners know this, but Todd Starnes, who's frequently on this program, and now actually on Newsmax, and very open Christian conservative, he was a Fox News pundit who ended up leaving the network, not of his own choice, and Guy Benson was hired as his replacement. And that tells you everything that you need to know about, you know, where Fox was going, and this was years ago. But the fact that Guy Benson is being congratulated over this, and Orin, I'm disappointed in some Fox News personalities like Kayleigh McEnany. She's out as supposedly the Christian, the one on the network. Hannity is supposedly a Catholic. I haven't seen any commentary from them, and they're being quiet. Well, why? Probably because it goes against the network's view. And so what should this tell us as viewers and as listeners? Because Fox News still runs basically the PR wing of the RNC. And this is exactly why alternative media like American Family Radio, like The Blaze, you know, like some others need to rise, I think, even further in the awareness of the mainstream right's view so that they're not simply tacitly listening to viewpoints from pundits like Guy Benson who aren't holistically conservative.
Yeah, I mean, it's a not-so-secret scenario that the conservative movement and a lot of the established corridors from, the staffing on the Hill to places like Fox News, frankly, it's gay. There's a lot of gay people hired there. There's a lot of preference there. You actually probably have an easier time getting here, hired in some cases as a gay man in Republican politics than a straight white guy. As much as we talk about the DEI on the left, often if you look at Fox News staffing, it looks as diverse as any college campus, right? So, this is just the case. And when you have that kind of culture, when you have that kind of mentality, then yeah, you're going to say certain topics are taboo. And even if you're a Christian, even if you're somebody who should have a grounded worldview, you're going to start making sacrifices because you understand this is the standard, this is the culture, these are the kind of people we hire, this is the kind of behavior we tolerate, and this is actually the kind of behavior we venerate. You know, we're not just tolerating it, we're praising it, and you need to go out and be performative and praise it like everybody else in the network. And if Fox is the only major outlet, if they're the only major place where people get their news, then all they're getting is that distorted view. And all the commentators who come on feel that pressure to adopt that worldview, or else they just don't get the job. But when there all are alternatives, like the ones that you're talking about here, The Blaze and Family Radio, then all of a sudden, not everybody has to dance that tune. Now people can stand up and have a backbone and say, you know, this is not right. This is not what conservatism could look like. And, you know, we still have platforms. We don't suddenly disappear off the map of the conservative landscape for, you know, not celebrating the next purchased child, the next child who will never have a mother because two gay guys selfishly decided they wanted to ape what a family looks like instead of turning away from their sin, embracing Christ, and having a family in the way that it was meant to be.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that we need to pay attention to. And I think one of the very few good things about the rise of social media and the rise of, you know, the alternatives. And even though there's a lot of noise now on social media, there's a lot of noise in the podcast space, we can at least have a lot of alternatives of where we listen to commentary. I mean, news is news. And I even get, you know, some, I listen to and read, you know, a wide variety because I want to know what everybody's saying. But in terms of the commentary, we have options and we have more choice today than we've ever had. And I think that also is true, Oren, for candidates as well. I mean, if we look at the gatekeeping of the GOP in the past, because of social media and because of alternative media, there have been, there is the ability to have candidates rise to the public awareness and name recognition that we've never had before. Now, that's a double-edged sword, because I think there are people like Zoran Mamdani, for example, that rose through social media that might have otherwise not had any ability to truly run, much less get elected. But that's where the GOP is still consistently, even with Trump, trying to gatekeep. I mean, Trump wants only the people that he selects. We're seeing that even right now in, you know, in a lot of races across the country, including our home state, the Florida governor's race, and with the selection and attempted coronation of Byron Donalds. And we're seeing that a lot of other places. And we're also seeing that in the context of even the Florida governor's race, where Governor DeSantis is refusing to endorse Byron Donalds in the primary, rightly so. And there was an article in CNN the other day that was saying, you know, that DeSantis is basically not towing the GOP party line, and so may not have a lot of friends if he wants to do anything else after he leaves office in Florida because of that. And, you know, my thought on that is, well, good for Governor DeSantis. And we need to ensure that the GOP is not just this gatekeeping party of only the candidates that they select, but that we actually have these alternatives of people that are genuinely conservative that we like. But that's going to take a lot of very intentional and I think some coordinated movement. The best alternative movement that we've had in recent history was the Tea Party. But I think that until an alternative candidate can actually break through and attain the presidency, like what Trump did and how he could have transformed the GOP instead of basically becoming the establishment himself, I think that there will be isolated moments, but there won't be genuine, true transformation of the GOP. What do you think?
Well, I think that a lot of people, you know, however you feel about the way that Trump developed over the years, a lot of people in the GOP basically decided that they can't beat Trump, so they'll lay low until he's gone and then try to retake the party and turn it back into the Republican establishment we're familiar with. Again, you know, you can say that Trump ultimately did not succeed in kind of the revolution that he set out for, but the fact is that many, many, many in the Senate and the House still hate him. That's probably why the sole reason we're not getting the SAVE Act is just despite Donald Trump. So I think that ultimately, yeah, it will take another, we need a successive candidate that is equally as disruptive as Donald Trump, maybe even more disruptive, maybe in a different direction. But if we immediately snap back to Mitt Romney's and John McCain's, then we will have entirely failed in our attempt to turn the Republican Party into a party that actually cares about its voters and its values, and instead, simply returned itself to the status quo. And I think there are a lot of people in the institutions of the GOP, in the institutions of the government, in the institutions of the party mechanism that are ultimately just waiting for Trump to step off stage. I think that's a lot of what we're seeing when it comes to the attacks on J.D. Vance. I think he's seen as a clear successor to what Trump was trying to do with the party. That's why so many people are, attempting to cast other candidates immediately, even men who have already said they're going to support J.D. Vance. So I think what we're seeing is a battle for the soul of the party. I think Trump should have worked much harder throughout his time to replace, in primary, so many of the members of Congress who have pushed back against him, or people like Maria Salazar, who for some reason have his endorsement despite pushing for amnesty. I think that's going to be probably one of the biggest failures of Trump's administration when we look at this long term, his lack of dedication to transforming the party on the ground as we see it. But I do think that we, as you say, we really do need to see another disruptive candidate so that we do not see the GOP just kind of re-ossify back into this neoconservative consensus that the entire movement of Trump was kind of lined up to push back against.
Yeah, so well said. And we've got to take a break here. Orrin McIntyre, really appreciate it. And, this is where we need to be actual, genuine conservatives and say what we are conserving. And not that we're always focused on the past, but that we are focused on God above. And we are saying that because our rights come from God, our creator, we understand our reality through that biblical worldview lens, and that necessarily dictates our policy and the principles that we stand for. And we don't have, the Guy Bensons of the world and the Kennedys who can claim some measure of conservatism, but aren't holistically advocating for the principles that our politics really should stand for. So I would encourage listeners, if you still watching Fox News, take it all with a grain of salt. Make sure to measure the commentary against the truth and the biblical worldview. We'll be right back.
America's 250th birthday. It's a great excuse to have some extra cake and ice cream, but we can help your celebration go well beyond that. Show your patriotism with America 250 apparel that will become a memento of this special year. We also have special episodes on AFA Stream to help underscore that America is a Christian nation and help you find God in the Constitution. Find all of this and more in one place. afa.net/topics/250. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, you may have heard that the United Kingdom has a new prime minister. So Britain's newly appointed Prime Minister Andy Burnham is now the seventh prime minister in a decade. And this coming from the Council on Foreign Relations, what's to expect from the UK's new prime minister? Well, he enters Downing Street with a Manchesterism agenda of devolution and reindustrialization and a cooler disposition toward Washington than his predecessor, at least according to them. So let's welcome in raw egg nationalist Charles Cornishdale, who you can follow on X, who is in the United Kingdom. And raw egg, what can we expect from the new prime minister in the wake of Keir Starmer's departure?
It's great to be speaking with you again, Jenna. So, yes, so the United Kingdom has its seventh prime minister in a decade. And I think that's a sign of the kind of structural instability that we have in the UK now, and the fact that actually the UK is becoming increasingly impossible to govern, even when you have an enormous majority in Parliament, which is what Keir Starmer had. Keir Starmer got 400 plus seats in Parliament. He had a whacking majority, could force through whatever kind of agenda he wanted to, and yet still he was pushed out within 2 years. I think Andy Burnham is, well, Andy Burnham in many ways, to me at least, sort of stands for everything that's wrong, everything that's sort of so superficial and glib and meaningless about politics in Britain today. I mean, Andy Burnham has run for the Labour leadership before in the past, multiple times, I believe. And he was kind of a joke candidate. He wasn't somebody who anybody really took particularly seriously, nor was Keir Starmer for that matter. But this is the juncture that we find ourselves at. We're actually these sort of token politicians who, you know, really wouldn't have passed muster 10 or 15 years ago or 20 years ago, and certainly not 30 years ago, are now leading the country further and further into the abyss. Burnham's agenda, yes, as you say, the Council on Foreign Relations, he has this devolution agenda. He wants to devolve more power to the north of England. So that's a region of England. There's devolved government in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland already. But he wants there to be power to go back to the north of England. The north is sort of by contrast with the south, and certainly the area around London is pretty deprived, pretty neglected. Deindustrialized, you know, we've had decades and decades of deindustrialization, and the people of the north have been left behind. On paper, at least, I don't think that that's a bad idea. But Britain is facing much worse problems than a north-south divide. And Andy Burnham, like I say, I think he's a token character. He's a lightweight. He's someone who is very focused on social media and has been focused on social media. He models himself on Mamdani. In many respects, he's definitely taking a leaf out of Mamdani's book when he was Manchester mayor. So he was mayor of Manchester. He was posting these sort of on the street selfie videos, trying to go viral, aping Mamdani's style. And we're already sort of seeing some of that with his tenure as prime minister. It's very focused on social media. It's very focused on messaging. But whether there will actually be any significant measures that do anything to reverse the decline is another question altogether.
Yeah, and that's really fascinating that we were just talking in the last segment about kind of this rise of social media candidates and how the popularity of social media can generate a lot of support for candidates in all offices, obviously, even across the pond, than would otherwise necessarily be even considered. And so Britain has often been a political trendsetter for the West, or maybe a cautionary tale. But, now with the rise of Mamdani here in the ways that you're suggesting, what we're seeing in the UK today and the preview of where Europe is, where is this headed that may be a lesson for America to learn?
Well, certainly. I mean, we're still seeing mass immigration proceeding at a great pace, reshaping Britain, changing Britain, huge numbers of people coming in legally and illegally. I mean, it's one thing that's worth noting, actually, is, you get a lot of focus on the government focuses a lot on illegal immigration, and there's a lot of talk about the boat migrants, people who are crossing the channel from France in boats and landing on British beaches and claiming asylum. But actually, they're a small number compared to the number of people who are being let in legally by the government. It's legal immigration that is being used to swamp Britain and has been used to swamp Britain since 1997, since Tony Blair came to power with New Labour. So the immigration thing, I think, is really the big thing. There are big problems too, I think, in terms of employment law, in terms of welfare and benefits, which are all tied up with mass immigration. Britain is consistently falling behind in terms of innovation and investment. Britain really is losing out, I think, in the sort of high-tech investment sphere. We're losing out in banking. The City of London was kind of gutted by Starmer and has been gutted in recent years. So we're in a bad way socially and economically, and it is all tied up. It's tied up in decades of mismanagement, of short-term policies, of governments that have been happy to simply to focus on lines on a graph and making them go up largely by, importing more and more people. So I mean, I don't think we're going to see an end to this sort of short-termist thinking. Andy Burnham has said that Britain needs a change and that he's going to usher in a totally new way of doing government, and that he's sort of going to return almost actually to a kind of pre-Thatcherite way of doing government, go back to the 1970s, which is pretty ominous in and of itself, because, again, Britain was labouring under a socialist government in the 1970s. And, you know, it got to the point where actually Idi Amin, who was the dictator in Uganda, which had formerly been a British colony, was sort of trolling the British government, offering to send bananas to Britain, banana aid. So, I mean, if Britain is going back to the 1970s, then really, really God help us.
Yeah. It's always so fascinating that, you know, every new politician that comes into power is suggesting, well, we need to change everything and we need to, you know, go either move forward or go back to, you know, all of these other things instead of figuring out what is working, but actually, you know, go to the fundamental principles of government that have worked because they're the principles that come from God, our creator, and the purpose of government to preserve and protect the rights that come from him. And it's interesting as well for Andy Burnham specifically that, and going back to when you're mentioning, you know, he has done a lot on social media. The UK has received criticism for policing online speech and prosecuting certain social media posts and, you know, kind of cracking down on some of these other alternative views and even faith-based views. Where do you think he'll stand on some of that, since he himself has exercised that freedom just to even launch himself into this office?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, one of the things that Andy Burnham does quite well is that he presents himself as a man of the people. And that's one of the things that he does with his social media videos. You know, he's on the street in Manchester, he's walking past the school he went to as a, you know, as a teenager, and he's talking to people he grew up with, and he's out in amongst normal people, and he's just Andy. That he takes great pride in the fact that people call him Andy on the street. And but I don't think that you know, that this appearance of being a nice, friendly guy necessarily will in any way mean that he's any less authoritarian than someone like Keir Starmer, who had Keir Starmer had a big image problem, but he also tried to present himself as, you know, nice guy, caring guy. And yet he presided over a vicious crackdown on free speech. I mean, the famous case is, there was a famous case, I forget the name of the woman now, actually, during the summer of 2024, after the unrest that was caused by the Southport stabbings, when the son of a Rwandan migrant went into a dance class and started stabbing little girls and killed at least three and terribly, terribly wounded, like almost a dozen others. A woman was sent to prison for, I think it was 14 or 16 months, for a hastily deleted tweet. Mother of three, 40 plus years old. So there was quite a vicious crackdown, and it drew the attention of the State Department. You know, it drew the attention of Vice President Vance, who talked about it, and Donald Trump talked about it when he met with Keir Starmer in the White House, and indeed when he met with Keir Starmer in Scotland. So I don't think that there will necessarily be any kind of meaningful change there. I don't think that Andy Burnham, just because he uses social media, is some champion of freedom of expression. I think that what he is he's very aware of the power of social media to project an image, in the same way that Zoran Mamdani is. I mean, it's worth remembering Zoran Mamdani is a communist. He has talked about seizing the means of production. He is an old school communist, and he hates white people. He's talked about differential taxation for white neighborhoods. However cool he might look riding the subway, talking into a pen, you know, in this sort of kind of hipster ironic style, he's an old school communist. And so, yeah, don't be deceived by the image. If Andy Burnham seems like a nice guy from down the road, I don't think that is any reason to believe that he isn't also an authoritarian who will crack down on freedom of speech when it suits him.
Wow. Well, we've got to take a break here, but Raw Egg Nationalists, you'll be sticking with us through this break to talk about another headline. And, you know, this is where, again, social media can present people and candidates and issues, you know, maybe packaged in a way that is very accessible, very interesting. But we always have to pay attention to the worldview and where people are coming from. And, you know, this is more of a cautionary tale, and looking perhaps another 10 years down the road, it doesn't seem like Britain is on a path toward renewal, but continued secular decline. And we don't want that to be the continuation here in America, especially through illegal immigration. And some of this is why President Trump is pushing so hard for the SAVE Act. And that really needs to happen if we are going to continue to have even a sovereign nation in this country. But we will be right back with more.
It's been 4 years since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, but tragically, abortions have continued to rise. Today, the abortion pill accounts for more than 60% of all abortions, and last year alone, over 1.1 million babies lost their lives. That's why the work of Preborn Network clinics is more urgent than ever. Every day, mothers facing unplanned pregnancies walk through Preborn's doors searching for hope. Instead of pressure and fear, they're met with love. Through a free ultrasound, mothers meet their baby for the very first time.
It was like the beginning of my healing journey. They do an ultrasound, and that's when everything changed. Because when I saw my baby, and when I heard her heartbeat, that was it.
Just $28 sponsors one ultrasound. $140 helps rescue five babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, cupcakes lately have been more healthy than lettuce. And so if you've been seeing all of the posts with the cyclosporia outbreak of lettuce and people getting very, very sick, the Instagram posts have actually been quite hilarious, saying, donuts, this is your time to rise and shine. But of course, the leftist media is trying to attribute this to Trump and the HHS under Secretary Kennedy. And so the Daily Beast headline is, new twist deals blow to Trump's lettuce outbreak probe. Of course, you know, they somehow think that Trump owns this, and they label it unbelievable. Ha ha ha, wink, wink, see what you did there. But the investigation into the lettuce-linked outbreak has now, according to them, hit a snag. But Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. sought to assure Americans that the outbreak is under control. He also rebuffed concerns that budget cuts have negatively impacted surveillance and the investigation. So Raw Egg Nationalist still stays with us through this topic. And, you know, this has been a very interesting one, especially as the FDA has sought to isolate the proximate cause. I think it's hilarious, actually, that in any other way, shape, or form, any other restaurant or fast food chain that would have had this type of outbreak kind of attributed to some of the food that they served probably would have gotten negative press. But somehow, everyone has actually laughed this off, that Taco Bell is implicated, and been like, you know, Taco Bell, I love you anyway, this is expected, and said, you know, this isn't going to stop me from eating Taco Bell. Just the whole thing is kind of hilarious. But on a more serious note, what's your thought on the cleanliness overall of the way that we as Americans import our produce? Because this is directly attributable, this specific parasite, to human feces that get in the field, have to be in the field for a while, at least my understanding, and then be in at least the water or some other contamination in some of either the lettuce or the bagged lettuce. And that is a really important, I think, sanitary and safety concern, especially when we're dealing with imported products.
Yeah, I mean, we should be in no doubt. Cyclosporiasis is very, very unpleasant. You know, it causes prolonged diarrhea, severe gastric symptoms. It's not nice. There have been something like 4,000 lab confirmed cases already, and thousands more suspected. across over 40 states, you know. So this is a nationwide outbreak of a parasitic infection that can actually kill people. It can kill, you know, elderly people, it can kill children. So it's definitely something to be taken seriously. I mean, the thing is, look, I mean, if you are importing products from a country that has different kinds of hygiene controls and different ways of doing things, then yeah, I mean, this is a risk that you run. But what's interesting actually to note, Jenna, is that it happens to produce that's produced in the US. I mean, salad in the US is also increasingly a source of gastric illness, largely because of the way that it is produced. And you know, I am an advocate of the consumption of raw eggs and raw milk, and people are worried about the consumption of raw eggs and raw milk because they think they're going to, you know, ingest a pathogen, they're going to get salmonella or E. coli or something like that. But the truth is actually, if you buy a bagged salad in the US, you are at a greater risk now of getting something like salmonella or E. coli from lettuce leaves, because what happens is you have immigrant workers in the fields. You know, they're working for pennies. They're farmers hire immigrant labor because it's cheap, and they put them to work in conditions that no American or very few Americans would tolerate to work in, and that includes bathroom breaks. So what actually happens is that there aren't any bathroom facilities for lettuce pickers and salad leaf pickers. So what do? They go in the field where they're picking the salad. They don't wash their hands. There are no real sort of sanitary procedures. They just continue picking salad. And then what happens? Well, the salad becomes an incubator for a harmful pathogen that's transmitted from human feces. So although this outbreak has come from Mexico, and it highlights the dangers, let's say, of a transnational food supply chain that you don't have full control over and testing over, this is happening. The call is coming from inside the house too. You know, this happens in the US as well, and it happens because of the use of cheap immigrant labor, people who are made to work under deeply unsanitary conditions, so that producers can, you know, run their costs down and make more profit. So it is a serious problem, and it's a transnational problem, but it's also a domestic problem as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is in part why, I mean, just one of a myriad reason that the whole push against illegal immigration and, you know, people who come in and who don't share our ways of ensuring hygiene and some of these other things can affect people in America and some of these conditions. And so, you know, for a long time, it's been debated saying, okay, well, if we, you know, as some Democrats have very famously said, you know, who's going to pick our crops if we get rid of the illegals? Well, if you make sure that their wages are good and that their conditions are good, people will work jobs. And I mean, that's just, you know, a fact of the economy. And so it raises a number of questions, but also the question around whether we here in America should be importing as much produce specifically, but even all kinds of other things, or we should be focused more on growing things domestically and focusing on agriculture and farmers here in the United States.
Yeah, well, I actually think there's another issue that it raises. It raises the issue of automation. Now, during Trump's first term, when he started to crack down on illegal immigration, the meat packing industry invested heavily in automation. They were forced to invest heavily in automation so that they could do the jobs that the that the illegals were doing in these great big meat packing plants. And now actually automation in meat packing is a standard thing. It has introduced all sorts of efficiencies. It's cut down on the need for cheap labor, especially cheap immigrant labor. There are machines now that will pick fruit, that will pick salad, and will pick vegetables. I think that as part of the Trump administration's push to crack down on illegal immigration, they need to provide incentives for farmers to automate their production. There's absolutely no reason, I say this on Twitter, why salad leaves, fruit, need to be picked by people from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, wherever. If you invest in automation, you get rid of this problem. Not only do you get rid of the problem of illegal immigration, but you also get rid of the problem of an unsanitary supply chain. You don't have a problem where actually, you know, you've got Latino workers who are, you know, defecating in the fields, not washing their hands, picking salad, gets bagged up, and then people get sick when they buy it and make a salad at home. So there are all sorts of ways to approach this problem, and there are ways to approach this problem that don't actually harm farmers. Farmers are obviously worried about their bottom line, like any business owner is. They're worried about making a profit. And so I do think that actually this needs to be framed and approached in a way that actually benefits everybody.
Yeah, and that's a really fascinating perspective. And, you know, when you take the political angle as well, I mean, because obviously agriculture and supporting farmers and supporting American and domestic manufacturing has been a huge part of Trump's agenda since the very first term. All of that, it's interesting to me that even articles and outlets like The Daily Beast, who clearly are no fan of Trump, are trying to make him own this particular outbreak because in their characterization, changes at the HHS and changes in some of the oversight have led to this type of outbreak. When Kennedy says, you know, you can't attribute it specifically to those changes, but how political should something like this be versus actually looking at policy that, as you mentioned, can advance a better and more clean manufacturing process and processing process than just simply focusing on the outbreak itself?
Well, I think, look, unfortunately, this isn't just about health. This isn't just about an outbreak of a diarrhea-causing parasite. This is about mass immigration. And so, of course, you are going to have leftists, Democrats, also people on the Republican side who are heavily kind of bought off by the farming lobby. You know, you're going to have people arguing about this as a political issue because what it really touches is mass immigration. And, you know, leftists want mass immigration to continue. So, of course, what are they going to focus on? They're going to focus on institutional failures, and that's exactly what they're doing with HHS and Trump and RFK. They're saying this is because you've made cuts at HHS and now we're not testing salad properly and people are getting sick where they weren't before. They don't want to talk about whether this is actually a problem that is attributable to mass immigration and to different factors. So it's gonna remain a partisan issue, I think, because it does touch on the central issue of the Trump administration and of our time, which is mass immigration and its effects on the American way of life and the quality of life of Americans. But yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, we'd just be talking about ways to improve the supply chain, ways to automate the supply chain, perhaps. But of course we're not going to. This is going to be a partisan issue. The left is going to bash Trump and RFK Jr. over the head with it as much as they can to avoid discussing the real issue.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, never let a good parasite go to waste, right? I mean, that's the lesson that we can learn here. But in just the last minute or so, we have with you a raw egg nationalist. Again, you can follow him on X. Writes a lot of great articles as well for a variety of outlets. So where should Trump and Kennedy's HHS focus then here?
Well, I think obviously they are going to have to focus on ensuring that products that come from Mexico are tested, the particular products that people are most at risk from, which include salad. They're going to have to focus on that. But also, as I say, I think they should be looking for ways to incentivize farmers to automate, to cut down on illegal the use of illegal immigrants in harvesting. And also, I think what they need to do is they probably need to do raids or sort of visits to farms to make sure that there are adequate sanitary facilities available as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time on both topics this morning. Really appreciate it. And meanwhile, again, you know, donuts and cupcakes, this is your time to shine. So as we look and make sure that we're staying away, hopefully, from a lot of this parasitic outbreak. But it seems like it's being relatively more contained. And that's a very, very good thing. All right. Well, that is all the time that we have today for Jenna Ellis in the Morning. As always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net. Preborn has rescued over 400,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com/AFR.